All right.
I think we live.
Welcome to the Presidio Bitcoin Jam, yet another Friday.
Another Friday. How back in the studio.
Good.
Steve, you made it.
Yeah.
I made it, but I first want to celebrate something we forgot last episode. Last episode was our 50th episode.
Oh,
50.
That's right.
Okay.
So this is 51st, but I felt like that was a milestone.
That's a good milestone. Yeah. So we basically did about a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we celebrated our year.
We started the last week of November.
We celebrated the year, but then we skipped a few.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we got 48.
Got to 50.
Yeah, we're at 50.
We get like a 2-week vacation.
Yeah.
If we make it through this one, we'll be at 51.
And Steve, you're also celebrating, I believe, Iowa one. Is that right?
No.
I just want to focus on the dedication first, right? Like, this man was here in California.
2 days ago.
Even yesterday morning.
Wednesday night.
Right? No.
Yesterday morning, I was in California. I was in Presidio of Bitcoin, though.
The day before.
Wednesday.
Yeah. That's why you're on your way out.
Yeah. And then I had to wake at like, 3 a.m. For a 5 a.m. 5:00. Yeah, I didn't know flights started that early. But there's a 5 a.m. flight out of SFO. And there's not a direct flight to Iowa. So
there's fly through Chicago?
The best flight is United through Denver.
Oh.
Like in terms of minimizing the transfer. There was like a 9-month window, like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, where like Frontier or some like cheap airline had a direct flight to Iowa, but I think I was like the only person that took it. So
just
got rid of it.
Private jet.
Anyhow, 5 a.m. flight, got to Iowa in time, got to say hi to mom and dad for a little bit.
Oh, nice.
Go see the campus, because I don't really make it to the campus that often. And then, Iowa State campus, that is.
Yeah.
In Ames.
Yeah.
Got some new gear. I went to the, because like the bookstore. The Cyclone store is like overwhelming. There's like so much gear there. So I just like.
But wait, are these the Iowa State colors, red and black, or no?
No, it's that's actually a controversy at the school.
Oh,
Cardinal and gold are our official colors.
Yeah. That's
and we typically wear like red or yellow.
Okay.
Or cardinal.
I like the black and red.
So Matt Campbell, our now former coach, he started having his players wear black uniforms sometimes, which was controversial because the Iowa Hawkeyes are black.
Right.
I think the players like it. Anyway, and like
black swag.
I think one reason I got this though, like, what do we got here?
Prestigious basketball jam.
Yeah. Nice. This might go on an hour.
Yeah. But Matthew, you might need to chill a few games.
We're going to bug our audience as much as my friend group.
There you go.
My fantasy football league. None of them care about Iowa State and they hear all about Iowa State all the time.
I'm sure.
Anyway. Yes. So I got this a bunch of other gear. But the reason I like this, like if I wear typical Iowa State gear, it's very loud colors, right? Like around the Bay Area. Like there's no other Iowa State fans here.
Yeah,
so this is a little more subtle.
Yeah.
Any Iowa State person will know this is Iowa State. Here in the Bay Area, they'll think it's NASA Ames.
Right. Yeah.
So I can fit in with both crowds.
Yeah, here you go. I like it.
Like a rocket engine.
Yeah. Okay, but yes, long journey to get there. Then it was snowing. Yeah, you know, it's winter time and everything. I brought like three friends. Myself went to the Iowa State-Iowa rivalry basketball game.
Yeah. And to be clear, you guys are like dominating. Like y'all are like top five KenPom. Yeah. Iowa is like not.
Even they're top. They're like 22 in KenPom.
Oh, okay, not bad.
So I mean,
they're good. They're respectable.
They're good. They have a brand new coach. For 20 years, their old coach Fran, was the perfect coach as an Iowa State fan because they were just good enough not to get fired.
I feel like,
but they were very mediocre. So yeah. We just milked that for 20 years.
I feel like with the name Fran, that checks out.
But now they have a new
Fran
coach.
Fran is like, all right, we're beating Fran.
They have a new coach, and I gained a lot of respect for that coach last night because Iowa came to play. They had
there
a
you
plan.
Go.
Yeah. So we were hurting. We were down 13 in the first half, and I was like, why did I waste 9 hours to get here to lose as the number 14 in the nation? But we went on a huge run, but it's still, we pulled it out at the end. I mean, it's like, 2-possession game at the end. So it was intense.
And despite all of that, all the craziness, you still made it back for PBJ this morning.
Yes. So I'm so dedicated to you guys.
Dedication. Yeah.
Alex, folks who listen, that I took another 5 a.m. flight to make it back in time.
I would have thought we'd get a Zoom, you know, phone it in on the remote participation.
Yeah, man. I don't do 5 a.m. flights. I barely do any flights. But that's
I think I'm gonna nap after this show. Yeah. Let's see if I can make it through describing Sphinx or Shrinks or whatever.
We have Pod in the cereal saying fantasy football or closet RPG nerds. Change my mind. What do you say, Steve?
Yeah, no doubt about
sounds
that.
Accurate.
Huh? Well, I'm a total fantasy football nerd. But fantasy football is like mainstream in America.
It's like mainstream.
It's like 50 million Americans.
Win fantasy football with stats. Maybe that'll actually get to one of our topics later today.
Maybe you guys should assign that as like my vibe coding project.
Steve, that's your vibe coding project.
Yeah. All right. I'm actually.
That's actually a good one.
I'm going to take a note.
I mean, Steve's been talking about this idea for a decade.
And an even more important than that, have it ready for March Madness with SAT payout. We need that.
Yeah. All right.
We need that.
You know exactly what you want with your friend group. Just do exactly that. Very focused.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a good point of transition because we had, actually, there's something I want to touch on yesterday, but Matt was in the office. And Matt also got me inspired. I gave him a bunch of my ideas. And he was like, you should build these. And I was like,
yeah. You don't really have an excuse.
I know I don't. Well, okay. I want to throw a couple things
like
out
there.
You're
like an investor. Come on.
Bro, man, shit. Shit. I got a lot going on. Shit. People be chirping, like, research. But.
Blog post.
Yeah. Well, actually, so I do have something cooking up. I don't want to give too much away until it's ready. But one thing I will say is have y'all tried Gemini 3?
A little bit, yeah.
Yo. Gemini 3 is the truth. I see the vision with Google now. Like these guys are, it's unbelievable. Like it's the first time it's the first time I've ever paid for the super pro tier, which is like $250.
Didn't you talk about this on last week's show?
No, did I? I don't think so.
An audience member watched the show and said that you commented on Gemini 3 as you love it because it's the only thing that understands your ideas.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I did, but I've taken it further. It's my friend now, man. Like I see how these relationships form.
AI companion.
Well, anyways, we'll have more to come soon, but I have a new piece I'm formulating. And for those who are interested in this topic and you want to hit me up, thinking about energy, information, and entropy, Bitcoin's role in all of this, and it's a big deal. And Gemini understands and is pushing me forward. So I really appreciate that. All of that to say, you know, I do have product ideas. One day I want to be a product dude too, but like given limited time, I'm finding a way to use AI in my life, but it's like, you know.
You're mostly like in the web interface, kind of conversing with
it. Yeah, going back and forth and doing the deep research and just kind of being like, the key is being able to throw the right, like, okay, this guy talks about this. This guy talks about this. This guy talks about that. If you were to try and synthesize these into something about this, what would it be? And then you get that back. You're like, actually, try and like frame it this way a little bit more. And like, it's good.
Yeah.
It's really fucking good.
You haven't played with anti-gravity then.
I don't know what that is.
Anti-gravity is like the IDE for Gemini 3. So, you know, like Cursor. You're familiar with Cursor?
Yeah.
Isn't it the Windsurf technology or something?
Yeah, they acquired
Cursor. I think I've heard of them somewhere. Yeah. I don't know.
So anti-gravity is like, you know, Google's version of Cursor with their own, where they control the IDE and the underlying model.
Yeah. Okay.
It's the Gemini 3 thing. Just came out a few weeks ago now.
Super long Google. Super long X as well. But that's another story. Anyways, but yesterday what was so cool. So Matt says, quote, an audience member. So Matt was the guy that was talking. interesting. I'm working on phase state transition to my eyesight's bad recovery and repurposing BTUs for miners. Yeah, that's kind of related to what I'm thinking about. So DM me on Nostr. Yeah, if you've been to school. But what was so cool yesterday is because there was Builder, which I want to hear about from you. I couldn't stay for Builder itself. But like, you know, Steve, sadly you missed this day while you were out there, you know, dunking on people. But it was one of the first days that I felt, I mean, we've had many days like this before, but it was one of the strongest days I felt that Presidio Bitcoin was the seniest. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Like Matt was here dropping knowledge and like showing all this cool stuff he was doing. Dustin had, you know, a really, really smart Nostr pseudonym here. I had this guy, John Konkov, who was at our Type 1 Summit talking about some of these energy ideas here. There were a bunch of people I didn't even know, but like you could just, and then I had a great chat with Max Fang talking about kind of like where Lexi is going to fit in this whole world of like Lightning payments. I don't know. I just felt like it was one of the richest, like, oh my God, like there's bubbling and people are talking to each other and things are popping out of here. Like yesterday was one of the best Presidio Bitcoin like
maybe it was due to my absence.
Exactly. Like, all we need is this guy to get out, and all of a sudden the idea exploded. But anyways, it was cool.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the you know, the builder event was really good. I thought it attracted a lot of new people that I'd never seen before. Everybody was going around the room doing intros, and like there were a bunch of new Presidio Bitcoin members that I haven't met yet, and they're all, you know, it was a nice kind of like breakout of applause and cheers when people would introduce themselves as a new Presidio Bitcoin member. So there's definitely like a camaraderie.
Member or attendee to the event?
Well, the attendees who I think have recently joined, so recently new members, they'll be like, hey, I'm DK and I'm a member of Presidio Bitcoin. Yeah. People are like, oh, yay.
Cool.
So people that I don't think I've met around here yet, but who've maybe recently joined.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool that there's like a little bit of, you know, a little bit of camaraderie around kind of the membership of, you know, within the space. There were a bunch of people, I think there were about maybe a couple dozen people or so who showed up. Many new faces though that I hadn't seen before.
Mm.
And it was kind of like, I think there were 5 demos total.
Oh, nice.
So it was kind of a demo centric one, which I like. I kind of like seeing the demos, and then there were a lot of Q&A, mm-hmm. kind of very interactive around the things we saw. The Bitcoin Merchant Association. So you know the Bitcoin Merchant Association, right?
Is that real?
No,
you guys were like speculating.
It's called something else. What's it called?
Bitcoin Merchant Community.
Community. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not the association.
Get your naming straight.
He was looking at me like, what?
Come on.
Association is like,
please.
We named it, when we ideated it on this show, we said BMA,
okay,
but we
okay.
switched it to BMC.
Community.
BMC. But
that's got some real legs, so we got a little overview of how that's working.
Who's running that?
I think Haley.
Haley's the lead.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
But we have really great, I mean, Spiral initiated it after you guys came up with the idea. Thank you. But we have like, you know, we seeded 5 different states with... plushies and one pagers mm-hmm. to get it going. And then there was so much demand from other, like me. And
yeah.
We're up to like 16, 17 different states now.
Seriously.
With a local champion.
Oh, dope.
That
That's
many
crazy.
States.
Wow.
And she showed like, the map with all the like pins of all the
How many pins do we have now?
I think he's at 16 or something.
Not states, like total Square merchants accepting. Do we have an idea?
I think it's like a couple thousand, but BTC map is still like a couple thousand in the queue kind of thing. So several thousand. One more thing. Sorry to interrupt, but I don't know if she shared this last night, but in the, you know, we created that community Discord for BMC, which is intended for like these local champions and Bitcoiners like any of us who are out there trying to get merchants to turn it on. And some guy in the DC area has gone to 100 sellers and already has 12 converted, and he thinks there's like another 10 that are close to converting. Those are like serious numbers for one volunteer individual, right?
Yeah.
So. That's the kind of impact one person can have.
Do we know who this is and like what his motive is? He just like
Bitcoin? Ken's gonna meet up with him.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think the copy on the leave behind and the plushie really.
Yeah, the copy's good.
You know, you're like, hey, I'm grumpy because we all have to pay this 3%, right? It's kind of it's great copy, so it's very disarming when you hand somebody and show them this. She said unanimously, everybody sees the plushie and you're like, awesome, what's that? And it brings out a smile. Which is different than like, oh, like libertarian ideals or whatever, you know, people think of as a Bitcoiner. This is not that. This is like, hey, I'm going to help save you your 3%. And it's fun and you know, it has a personality.
I have a question, a Square question, because I was trying to explain this. I was actually trying to explain this morning to Anjali about like how payment networks work. And like, you know, most people are just like super bored. They have no idea how this works. They don't care, which I get. And I kept saying like, okay, imagine you don't care about Bitcoin. If I just scan with Cash App, pay dollars, you receive dollars, the fee gets cut out. And it's just like, well, who wouldn't do that? She's like, why don't they just do that automatically? So question, why isn't Cash App pay anyone that pays with Cash App just automatically pay? I guess that's what's coming.
Well, there's all kinds of answers to this. But I mean, the answer to like, why doesn't Square just automatically turn on Bitcoin payment?
If you're using Cash App. Because they used to have Cash App pay
but
before.
But you have to configure your point of sale to be in a certain state. So do you want it to be in the state where everybody gets automatically upgraded to this, well, we might call it an upgrade, but updated to this new style?
So I see like strong version, weaker version. Strong version is you just roll with Bitcoin for everything. The weaker version would be anyone that saw Pay with Cash App Pay before and use Cash App automatically is just Bitcoin.
But even Cash App Pay, which has been a thing for years.
For years, yeah. I used to use it.
It's not on by default for sellers. They have to turn it on.
Why not just turn it on?
Well, I don't know about that decision, but for Bitcoin, let's just, I probably can't get into all the details. But
I can
like,
imagine.
It's like regulatory legal stuff.
Got it. Okay.
So, but it's not cut and dried. There's all kinds of different like sellers and different like how they're incorporated and just all kinds of details there. But that's why it's not on by default. But I think over time that can be solved. But a point I've made though is that let's just say that, another practical reason is that you have to have you have to update your software, and Square doesn't have auto update.
Got it.
Because sellers tend to be really conservative. They don't want their software changing out from under them.
Right.
And some sellers just don't have the time to learn a new interface. It sounds simple to you, but like if it's new software, there's a new interface.
My understanding is Square actually tried auto updates at one point and got negative feedback because of that. Seller is like changed out from under them, and then they're busy running their business, not like they're not like us.
They're not trying to get like the best new tinkering technologies.
You know? Yeah, exactly. So, but even if everyone was magically, if all merchants were automatically updated, that they wouldn't be aware they can do this, and then they wouldn't be aware to promote Bitcoin payments to consumers. Now, the one scenario, which I think is what you're trying to get to, where there wouldn't need to be awareness is if it's Cash App consumers paying in dollars to merchants.
That's
and
exactly
I agree that that could be default and just work, but all the other scenarios, either Bitcoin on either end or both ends, then there has to be awareness.
Or just imagine like you have like there's one QR code. If you have Cash App, boom, it defaults to Cash App Pay, which is really just Lightning Pay. If not, then it kicks back to the old
one. Yeah, that stuff like that's being explored. I mean, obviously with any software product, the V1 is not the end state, right?
Of course, yeah.
And there's so many things that the Square team and Cash App teams know they want to do, but I agree with their decision, like, let's get it out there.
Yeah, get it out there.
It's definitely good enough to get out there.
Totally,
and then there's already like tons of known improvements, and there's explorations like you're talking about.
I love it, man. That's awesome.
But I guess the key point though, I think even if all that was like default and beautiful and perfect, there still needs to be like this Bitcoin field sales team.
Agreed.
At least for Bitcoin, because you need to create awareness that Bitcoin payments can be made, and you need to create awareness with merchants that they need to promote that they accept Bitcoin so that consumers know to do it. They need to create incentives for consumers to do it. So
I think both are important. I will say though, even if you just had like Cash App users doing this though, paying with the Cash App, and even if they don't know what Bitcoin is, that would be ideal. Everyone like knows you can do this, but like you'd probably still like 10x Lightning Network volume like immediately. Yes.
There was a nice demo of how the flow works from the consumer side, from Cash App.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you sort of have to have the, what is it?
Oh, I don't know. We just got funny guys in the comments today. Shout out to
you. The point of sale device has to be configured to accept Bitcoin, but then the user can choose to pay Bitcoin, but they can fund it with their Bitcoin balance or with a USD balance,
right,
which automatically buys Bitcoin to send to the merchant, I assume is what's actually going on in the back end. And there were a bunch of questions around how that works from like a tax perspective, which you can kind of chase it all and figure it out. But that at least raised some questions from the audience yesterday at Builder. But I thought it was actually like a really slick flow. It was like very well thought out. And you can see it sort of inching towards the vision of what you want to get to, you know, over time. I think it will get there. But you gotta sort of equip the merchants first to understand what it is and how it works and choose to enable it, and then, you know, get consumers using it.
I just want to give some love because we got some funny guys in the comments, some NIMs today. One guy is suggesting that his Isle of Yap speech is not the starting point to convert merchants. Another one is suggesting that definitely start with the creature from Jekyll Island or mandibles. So these are some pro tips, perhaps.
Hey, feel free to join our public Discord community and offer. Everyone's giving feedback there on what works, what doesn't work, what the challenges are.
Isle of Yap, baby.
Yep.
So we love fresh ideas.
Cool. All right. So tell us more about
that. That was cool. Yeah. What else we demoed? I'll save Matt's for last, even though it was first, because I think you've got more to say about that. We saw Hive Talk. Hive Talk?
I do.
I didn't realize she shared a bunch of the numbers. Do you know BitCarrot was the one who presented that? And she shared a bunch of numbers that are like really surprising. I think it was like in the thousands of people using this. It's almost like a Zoom type you know, type of service, but over it's sort of connected to the Nostra identity system.
And Lightning Zaps.
Yep. Yeah. So I thought that was impressive numbers for that kind of project, which they've fully, you know, fully bootstrapped, fully, you know, it's just, I think it actually breaks even now, they said, or it's close to break even.
Did they talk about, because this developer is very good, actually, did they talk about their, I don't want to say token curated registry from the old crypto shit days, but the idea around pay to post for registries?
Oh, there was a little discussion around pay to post stuff, I think, but we didn't get deep in registry.
Because they showed me that yesterday. Maybe this is from another presentation they made, but this was kind of a debate. I thought this was the most interesting thing they were bringing up is, you know, Kian basically with Stacker News, his whole point was the innovation of Stacker News is pay to post because you get rid of all the spam. You just like, yep. There's like so much you get, even if it's a very tiny payment. And I know he and some of the Nostra devs are going back and forth about whether Nostra should have in the protocol pay to post or not. And I think what's cool is this developer is kind of getting to is like that you can potentially, you know, for certain kinds of things, you can have relays that just say, okay, if you want to list, for example, like Algiaz runs Awesome Nostra, which is all the different projects, mm-hmm. but he can't keep track of that. You mentioned with like BTC Map, they can't keep track of everyone, you know, doing pull requests. So one idea they were proposing was that anyone can like submit, you have to do whatever, like 1,000 sats or 10,000 sats with it. And that's how.
Sorry, yes.
This, you filter through.
She did show the curated stuff. Yep. Yep.
I thought that was a pretty cool idea.
Yep. Now that you're referencing that, that reminds me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was cool. What else? We actually I liked that we kind of abbreviated the news thing. Alex just shouted out some of the high level news items, but we didn't end up doing deeper discussions, which was kind of a nice flavor.
Yeah.
I like that. And then Matt actually kicked it off, but he demoed. Well, actually, first, before we get to Matt's demo, I got a chance to hang out with Matt for like an hour before, and we were brainstorming all these things about sort of how his work with vibe coding, his work with like, you know, MDK and Lexi and sort of all the trade-offs he's experiencing. And I felt like, you know, he and I had done those like vibe casts a while back where we were sort of like, making things live online.
That's cool.
Which was fun, but I actually feel like there's more of an opportunity to take the style of things that he does. Like he has a very nice focused scoping of things. It doesn't attempt to be like a funded startup or something. It just attempts to be like a cool hack. And I feel like we could get more people. It's kind of the type of stuff I try to do, but I feel like Matt just is like a nice beacon of this. To create these like little mini hacks that are just fun and almost create like a community of people who make hacks and are also the consumers of the hacks and also have Bitcoin wallets ready and stuff. So you kind of like create a culture of gathering people, making hacks, appreciating each other's hacks in kind of low stakes, but you also end up figuring out, oh, what are the frontier of what works in Lexi or what works in MDK or where you would like to improve it? And you can give that kind of feedback then to those developers.
So are you creating it?
Well, I think we're...
Where's the community going to live? I agree with it. Let's do it. Let's you do it.
Yeah. Well, you've got Matt on payroll. So. I want to make hacks and be a part of this with Matt. Like, I kind of want to take inspiration from impressionista.fun and insanely.fun. I want to make...
Insanely.fun? I haven't seen that
insanely.
One.
Insanely.fun.
Oh, I don't even know that one yet.
Another fun game that he made. It's not Bitcoin-oriented.
Matt's on it. You're off the hook, DK.
Yeah, all right.
Congrats.
What's the name going to be, Matt?
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be super fun to just have a place where you can make a lightweight hack. And like I do with Matt already, you know, we kind of do this on text already, but a place where other people who want to make similar lightweight hacks can come and we can kind of make a little bit of like a, here's, hey, check out this cool thing I just did and kind of show it off.
So I think... TBD. Matt, oh, well played, sir. Matt's answer is TBD. Oh, I have a sense of humor.
Viber's paradise.
Yeah, exactly. Viber's paradise. That's good. What's exciting me is, I don't want to get too much in. I know we're going to do a prediction show soon.
Is that 2026 prediction?
Yeah, Steve dropped our 2025 prediction. We'll talk more about this. They're wrong, but
they're so good though that I think we just repeat them for 2026.
Well, that's kind of
were they bad?
They were good. They just we were over.
Were we just too optimistic or what?
Yes.
Okay.
Like, time frame. I still think they are generally spot on.
Basically, we were just like zero. Like,
living
not
in the
a
future.
Single. Okay. Yeah. Like not a single one came.
We're such strong visionaries.
Actually, you had one right. Yours was that there was going to be no protocol change. Which, yeah. Okay. Like, yeah. It's Bitcoin. Of course there's not. But you know, I do feel like, and I want to be careful because I was, you know, as I was told, I was like, you sound awfully confident in that, you know, thing that you just completely struck out on. But I do feel like this time is different in 2026. And the reason is like, it feels like, I think the tools are finally there and we finally have at least one person, Matt, that can like ship product. And there's going to be others like him. And I feel like seeing what he's doing with MDK, and I was talking with Max Fang from Lexi yesterday as well about like where sort of Lexi could ship some more of these demos. Mm-hmm. And we talked about ideas like, you know, shipping like, you know, a Gumroad or an agent with its own vault, like all the Gumroad being like, just like sell anything, a PDF, a video file, whatever for SaaS. I think the point is, with vibe coding where it is, with tools like MDK and Lexi and Albie ready to rock and roll, I think the missing ingredient is just a shit ton of examples. And so Impressionista is the first example I've seen where I'm like, this is a good app for like a normal non, you know, cult member. This is just cool. I pay a little bit. I get a cool image. I get a cool video. And so I think if we can get Matt shipping 10 of those and then 10 of those mats and then 100 mats. And like, I just feel like this could be the year where things, and then maybe there's a website where people can see there's going to be like, this is what I was telling Max yesterday. I was like, your tech is so awesome. Unleash it to the creativity of the crowds. And I think that's something that Nick is doing really well with MDK. And like, you're going to be shocked at what people build. But we just need like that, like whatever the word is, the fire starter, the flint. Yeah. And Matt is our best shot.
I think Matt is the flint.
Matt, you're the flint.
Well, because I think we, like it's, I was telling him too, I think there's this like notion of, hey, let 1,000 flowers bloom. And I just want to like, let everybody come up with the best ideas. I can't have the best ideas. I don't expect that I have the best ideas or that Matt necessarily has the best ideas, but he has a certain like taste making that can set the tone to get at least a half dozen or a dozen people making things like the things he makes.
Yeah.
And I would be one who
it's got to at least meet his bar because he's demonstrated.
Yeah.
It's not that hard to hit that bar.
And it's kind of a, it's like, in a sense, it's how focused it is.
Yeah.
I think oftentimes people come to a hackathon, they feel like pressure to make something that looks ambitious or sounds ambitious or that people will respect and appreciate as ambitious in somehow. And I think Matt's thing is kind of like, don't worry about it. It doesn't need to be ambitious. It needs to be fun and cool and check out this hack I made.
And it also needs to just kind of like look nice and work. Like prior to Matt, like vibing, the only like, in my opinion, like real product person in Bitcoin, and like maybe Albie do a little bit, was Kian. Like Stacker News like looks good. It's easy. It just works. Everything else is like a hack project. And like now we're finally starting to see things that I could take to a normie friend. They'll be like, oh, wow, that's pretty.
So that's a gratitude session for Matt.
Yeah, I guess Matt. This is a gratitude session for Matt.
Matt is the flint.
The flint. Matt Flint Belez.
Our second Pierre Richard was our first.
Right. Yeah, we were going to do it every week. But we now it's once just a year, once a year. Yeah. Matt got the 2025 gratitude.
Deanna is asking, what is it called? Impressionista. Matt, maybe you can drop a link in the...
Yeah. Impressionista.fun.
Mutiny. Yeah, Mutiny was nice too back in the day. I mean, what they're doing now. But like, my point is like, this is like, finally, I feel like the technology is good enough. Spark is there. Like, I feel like the technology is finally good enough. Like, this should be the year we get like a breakout app. I don't know if I'll say that, but like, because I was so confident last year. We get an app that at least like, I love.
What was the one that we got right? You said we got
nothing.
Somebody got... What was your one that you got
I
right?
picked some. Oh, I don't know. You could argue it's the easy one, that there would be no consensus change in 2020.
Yeah. And what other crazy things did we say that were
We'll touch that on next week's episode.
We got lots to cover.
Okay.
But we'll do, in the next week or two, we'll do predictions.
Yeah, cool.
So the other thing Matt did last night, which I think kind of that dovetails into stuff you want to talk about, is the Bitcoin human address.
Human. Oh, human Bitcoin address.
Human Bitcoin address. I don't get any of
the names
right.
Human Bitcoin address, HBA.
He was, so Bitcoin human address, BHA?
Oh.
Is it? No, it's, sorry. What is it?
Human Bitcoin address.
Human Bitcoin address, yes. HBA. Okay.
Hubba hubba.
So this is basically like, you know, if you're trying to send somebody Bitcoin, traditionally you're looking at like a big long string of characters and you're like, I don't know, was this thing right? Now the first four, the last four, you're sort of trying to do that versus what if I want to send you an email, I just send a human readable email like Matt. Max Webster, whatever, right? @gmail.com.
Thanks for doxing.
There you go. It was easy to guess. Is it?
It's not, right? No.
Okay.
Kidding.
So that's why I thought I could use it. So it should be as easy to send somebody Bitcoin as having an address like that, right? So he gave an overview of this BIP 353 product protocol improvement proposal. And I think there was also a Spiral blog post about such this week. So he gave a whole talk about that. But do you want to talk a little bit about the blog post or kind of what?
Yeah, I'll provide some context. And I know you had some questions. And I actually wrote, I looked online. There's a bunch of critique. Mm-hmm. Some what I'd call FUD, some misunderstandings, collection of all those things. I wrote down 10 different pieces of feedback.
Oh, wow.
How many questions did DK provide?
Two, I think.
Because if it's not like 49 or whatever it was. Like,
it wasn't an AI-generated list of 49.
He didn't DDoS you?
Yeah.
Not yet.
I feel a little DDoS at 10, but...
The day is young.
So, Spiral did a blog post, and it's really just almost a summary, like a culmination of a work over many years. There's no huge innovation that was not previously known. Like BIP 353 has been around for a couple of years now, and human Bitcoin address is just a friendlier name for BIP 353. Like Lightning address, which a lot of people in Bitcoin that use Bitcoin wallets are familiar with what Lightning address is. At least within that community, everyone knows what Lightning address is. So whether you use Wallet of Satoshi or Albi or whatever, it's like if you use Wallet of Satoshi, I use Albi. When we talk about Lightning address, we know what we're talking about, and they're compatible with each other.
max@getalbi.com if anyone wants to test.
But like,
docs.
So
that's a docs I'll take. Send me money.
So we felt like at Spiral, we felt like there needs to be a name that's not BIP 353, which is very like nerdy and technical, to just refer to what this is. So that's human Bitcoin address. So that's one thing that is open to feedback. Like Spiral doesn't get to like dictate this, so we're just like suggesting it, right? And we've spoken to a lot of folks. That's our proposed name for this. There's even a debate in and of itself, like do you even need a name? Like some people don't think you need a name, and like in the app, do you need to state that name? And I think that's a reasonable question. I do think we need a name though, just for the same reason that Lightning address has a name. I mean, there's a everyone talks about Lightning address, knows Lightning address. So if you don't have a name, then how do you refer to it? I don't really understand that argument. I can steal man the argument for like in the app itself, like where you show, Max Webster at albi.com or whatever.
Yeah, max@getalbi.com.
But do you need a label next to that saying Lightning address or human Bitcoin address? And arguably you don't.
No.
Especially with human Bitcoin. With BIP 353, it starts with the Bitcoin B symbol and then Max Webster at albi.com. Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily need to say it in the app.
Right.
And so each app developer, I think the guidance to app developers should just be like, you can say human Bitcoin address, but you don't need to either. But like human to human though, like if you're like, hey, if DK, if you message me and say, hey, I want to pay you back, what's your blah, right?
Yeah.
And like, I think eventually it keeps getting shortcutted down over time once it just becomes ubiquitous. But initially, you might say, What's your Bitcoin? You might say what's your Bitcoin address, right? But currently, then I might interpret that as the on-chain C1, traditional on-chain Bitcoin address. But what you really want is this other thing, right?
Yeah.
So then I might send you this BC1 like long string, and then you're like, no. I'm at human Bitcoin address, and then I'd give you that. And then over time, though, like everyone, like most users, won't be using on-chain. So their default instinct will be something else, and that something else will be human Bitcoin address.
Yeah.
So you don't actually have to like spit out like what's your human Bitcoin address.
Right.
You just be like, what's your? I want to pay you. What's your address? It probably gets shortened to that.
And like, what's your Venmo? Right.
Yeah. What's your Venmo?
What's your address?
So two thoughts. I know you're going to get more into this, but to be clear, like I mean, I just use Lightning address, and I know we're going to get into that, and that's probably the top of the discussion. But like most people that are doing this would just say Lightning.
Yeah, I agree. That is what is done today.
Right.
Interestingly, a lot of the criticism that I've seen would also apply to Lightning Address. Okay. So one thing I'm actually puzzled about, I never saw that criticism of Lightning Address. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand why people are coming out of the woodwork with these criticisms of Human Bitcoin Address, but they didn't have the criticism of Lightning Address. But so far in my engagement with folks, it just seems like there's a segment of Bitcoiners who don't like human readable names. They think it's like a step backwards. They think it's like going back to the fiat world, centralization points, and
is that because of the implementation or the assumption of how it would be implemented?
Well, introduce intermediaries. Even with this solution, which really reduces it substantially, there's still DNS in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're legitimate points. I mean, if we only use on-chain Bitcoin addresses and I only give it to you like in person or whatever, that's much more secure and stuff. But I just replied to someone on X to this effect. Good points. And I agree. We absolutely, this proposal is not saying don't use any other means to make Bitcoin payments. There are many use cases and scenarios where you shouldn't use human readable names. You can just use the sort of computer readable mm-hmm. names and it can still deliver a good UX. But there's other scenarios where humans are talking or communicating with other humans and you want the human readable name.
Yeah, right? Honestly, any of those complaints or whatever just sound like autists are going to autist, like the same for you. Like if you're the kind of person that needs to say that, this is for the 99.9%. Like by all means, keep rolling on the internet. Like, mm-hmm.
Well, okay, but then we'll have some fun in our Lightning address versus Bit353 debate because you might say the same thing there, but I'm going to bring up really, really important properties of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And we have had this debate for years, right? And so we're going to have it again now, live in the show. Because I've never felt like you two appreciate, and it's not just you two, lots of people, like especially Lightning address advocates and fans don't appreciate the benefits of Bolt 12 and Bit353.
Is Bit353, is that Bolt 12? Same,
no.
Same thing?
No.
Okay.
It supports it though, right?
Yes, it supports it. So human Bitcoin addresses, also known as Bit353, it's a DNS-based way that maps a human readable name, mm-hmm. like Max Webster at whatever. Albany.com
just Max,
or it could be like me at maxwebster.com. You could self-host as well, right? So and then it maps it to payment instructions. Mm-hmm. And so one big difference between LNURL and Lightning address and this is that it's not wedded to Lightning. It's not wedded to one particular payment protocol.
Mm-hmm.
You can plug in silent payments. You can plug in regular on-chain address. You can plug in Spark.
What's a silent payment? What's a silent payment again?
Silent payment is it's a reusable on-chain address that protects privacy or preserves privacy. Whereas if you just use regular on-chain addresses, then it's a very bad privacy practice.
TLDR, how does it work?
That's a whole nother discussion.
that to me is compelling. Reusable private address, that's a big deal.
So, and then you can also, even though I have concerns about ARC addresses, Spark addresses, Cashew addresses, like splintering things, but nevertheless, they exist. So you could have a wallet which provides all these different ways to get paid or ways to pay, and then you know, you'd be compatible with any other wallet. But that actually, one of the, I think I wasn't here last night, obviously, but Damien, I was told Damien had one question about, human Bitcoin addresses don't solve the problem of like having one ubiquitous payment protocol across wallets. And that's true. That's not its intention. I personally think like Bolt 12 can emerge to be that. Like right now, obviously, like on-chain addresses and Bolt 11 are the two most ubiquitous payment protocols mm-hmm. for Bitcoin. Historically, on-chain was ubiquitous.
Right.
Like that's the only thing. But now there's Lightning wallets that don't support on-chain.
Mm-hmm.
Some do, some don't. So they're starting now. It's just it's a majority, but a subset of wallets support on-chain.
Mm-hmm.
Every Lightning wallet supports Bolt 11. It is ubiquitous within Lightning wallets. And also Cashew, Fediment, Spark, Arc, all of those support Bolt 11. So that's very ubiquitous. Bolt 12 is the successor to Bolt 11. Early stages of adoption. But like in the post, we show like dozens of applications already supporting Bolt 12. So it's on its way. But BIP353, human Bitcoin addresses, is not intended to be the singular payment protocol, but it is intended to be sort of that the mapping between a human readable name and ways to get paid.
Okay. And so between BIP, I don't know if you want to treat these together with Bolt 12 or if you want to break them apart, but like if you had to like say like in like one sentence, like why is this something you feel so passionately about, either Bolt 12 or BIP?
Well, so let's talk about some of the really important properties of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
In Bitcoin payments. One is security.
Mm-hmm.
Two, censorship resistance. Three, privacy. That's like three. And I think Bitcoiners would nod their head.
Sure, all of those.
And that's why hopefully you gain an appreciation for why this is a superior solution, technological solution to LNURL-based mm-hmm. systems. So let's take security, for example. So with the LNURL, if you have, most users use a third party to host it,
mm-hmm.
and it's serving up your invoice.
Mm-hmm.
So they can serve up an invoice, which is not for you, but for another wallet, mm-hmm. right?
I have to trust the server.
Yeah. And it could be an attacker. Like you might be using the wallet's server, and they might not be malicious, but someone's hacked into their system and changed it. And they might do it in a really subtle way. They might change it so that only like 1 in 100 invoices get swapped out, or sort of just siphon mm-hmm. off like 1% or mm-hmm. 5% or 10% of the Zap revenue or money that's coming into each of your accounts,
yeah.
which would be kind of hard to detect.
Yeah, you might not notice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a security vulnerability, right? And so that is addressed with this technology. Censorship resistance. So if I want to ensure that the third trusted third party can't get in the way of censoring me receiving payments, I can host the stuff myself. Mm-hmm. But compare the difference between for a normal user. Normal user is not going to want to run a server at their house and then like be a part-time DevOps person to run a web server and an LNURL server and make sure it has 24/7 uptime so that they can be receiving payments, mm-hmm. right? That's not realistic. But someone buying their own domain, it is realistic that someone can buy their own domain, and adding one entry in a domain in DNS is like something that every DNS provider provides. That's not crazy to expect someone to do that.
Okay, so one question on that. It's still a giant pain in the ass today. If I buy a URL to even host a website, I have to use WordPress or someone to like
agreed.
Do that.
So my expectation would be most people will just use a third party.
Yeah.
But if you are someone who's worried about censorship, like wherever you live or whatever your environment or situation is that you are in at risk of censorship, then you do need to take, then you don't, you're going to be predisposed to not want to trust a third party.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have two options in front of you, one is to buy your own domain and add one entry to a DNS versus become a part-time DevOps person running an LNURL and web server, that's night and day scenario. Mm-hmm. Those are two very, very different propositions, okay. right? So it's better for censorship resistance. And then it's better for privacy because when you have a trusted third party, they see all of your payments, right?
Mm-hmm.
They see the amounts, the recipients, and they know you're sending it. So with this solution, you gain privacy.
So in the abstract, all of those are obviously better things. I guess, how much more complicated is it to implement this? Because to me, the question is never like, so my bias on this, and I'm very open to having my mind shifted, but my bias is I'm a, left side of the curve. Like whatever gets adoption easier, what is the Gorin, worse is better. Like if it gets adoption, great. Now, why haven't we seen more people adopting it? From a technical perspective, how much more difficult is it to implement this versus obviously LNURL got adoption because it's easy, or it's easy enough that people are doing it?
Well, it was done at the application level, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was easy. It was quicker to get built because it was at the application level instead of the protocol level.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Lightning protocol level. So it's built into the Lightning implementation. Like Bolt 12's an official part of Lightning specification now. So
that's different than the BIP353 though. Like if you could get Bolt 12 and automatically get this as a result, the BIP353 is a result of that.
They are distinct things. Yes.
But if you want human readable addresses, do you need both the Lightning sort of?
Then you need both.
You need both. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it took years for Lightning implementations to implement Bolt 12.
Yeah.
So Lightning Address had a big head start because of that. But in terms of like how hard is it to adopt now, it's not hard to adopt. Like I said, there's dozens of applications and wallets that have now adopted Bolt 12 once it became. So the hard part was putting it into the Lightning implementations like LDK and Eclair and CLN, et cetera. So,
and then, I mean, my obvious question, all of this is like L&D. I know that's like the big sort of like, have they adopted it? If not, like it won't just get adopted when they finally do.
They've implemented almost every part of Bolt 12, except for onion messages, but it's on the cusp of being merged. So there's a very good chance that in 2026 it'll launch.
Yeah.
But even in the interim, L&D users have already supported Bolt 12 because of the LNDK project, which is like you can run a sidecar. It's actually using some of the LDK code to support it along with L&D. So Strike, for example, has supported Bolt 12 for a long time.
Let's just say if L&D fully supports it next year, okay, so now Bolt 12 is ubiquitous. What would then need to happen to get the addresses? Like you would still need BIP 353 to get...
Yeah, like Phoenix has already launched this, and Lexi, I don't think they've launched it yet, but they have a demo as well.
Okay.
Of supporting BIP 353 human Bitcoin addresses.
Yeah.
So all this stuff exists. So it's not hard at this point. Mm-hmm. It's just it took a lot of time to get to this point. But that's why it has all these important benefits over Lightning Address and LNURL, and now it exists and it's easy to adopt.
Can you make it backwards compatible?
So that's the primary reason for Spiral's post and push here is to like push for adoption, right? There's now you kind of like don't have an excuse. So you asked about adoption. You can break the adoption down into both sending and receiving. Mm-hmm. So I think the push should be for, hey, just support the sending use case because to start with. Mm-hmm. And then for products that really want this new technology and this new way to do human readable addresses, they can support receive too. But until you get widespread adoption of sending, it's difficult to make it default in your wallet to receive that way, right? Because then you'd have wallets that aren't able to send to you. Okay. So the wave one of adoption from wallets needs to be sending, and supporting sending is not
the
hard.
Opposite of like the merchant, you know, the point of sale merchant thing we were just talking about, right? Yeah. There you need to focus on receive first.
Mm. It's the opposite, but it's the same as every other payment protocol adoption we've had, like SegWit and native SegWit and Taproot, like BEC32M, all these different payment. I mean, there's a history of payment protocol upgrades in Bitcoin, and you always start with the sender. Mm-hmm. If you get to a point where like 90%+ of sending wallets support it, then if you're building a new wallet, support, you can default to receive and be pretty comfortable with that.
Can you do all this backwards compatible? Because like, if you can, then I don't see, any reason not to. Well, it's such that if I send and it's like, if it's a Bolt 12 invoice, it pays out. If it goes Lightning Address, it does that.
Yeah, so you can do backwards compatibility. Let's talk about specific scenarios. But on the with the human readable name part, you can definitely as a wallet implement receiving that, and the user experience is good. Meaning, you can support both Lightning Address and human Bitcoin addresses. You default to start with human Bitcoin addresses. So if the sending wallet supports that, great.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, it falls back to Lightning Address. Phoenix chose not to do that, but
why?
But wallets can do that. I think they want to force the issue and get adoption for
interesting
for human Bitcoin addresses.
So one other major question I have. So if let's say my human Bitcoin address is B-symbol, it's B-symbol?
Yeah.
B-symbol max. Where is that enforced? Because I think the bigger question this gets back to me is your question always, which is like, if that's on the Bitcoin blockchain, like what I'm more interested in is like an address I own. Because otherwise, is that still an application level, like where Cash App has to implement it, but like Phoenix could have BMAX go to someone else?
Yeah. I mean, it's domain, it's DNS. So in that respect, it's just like Lightning Address, right? It's DNS based.
Yeah. So just to clarify it, you can't have at max. You could have max at
something.com.
You know, max is home.com.
What I still want more than any of this, I mean, this is cool, and I just want to own Max on the Bitcoin blockchain. If there was a way to tie that in, I feel like that would be a good way to get adoption.
Right. And that's, I mean, David's explored this a lot. And I mean, we can, I think we might have talked about that a little bit. But I mean, it doesn't exist though. Right? Right. No one knows how to do it.
But I feel like if you could tie this to that,
Sure. That can be some future step, right? I mean, it takes 5+ years to adopt a new payment protocol. So this is what I would call the bleeding edge, like the best real existing solution. What you're talking about, if we can get there, awesome.
And that can get like, layered on.
But it's
on,
R&D.
Right?
Yeah, if we could get it layered on.
If you were to own Max, you could then map it to Max at Max Home, which is the human Bitcoin address.
Yeah, no, I mean,
and then it can take all 12 offers and any kind of orchestration underneath that.
I mean, this reminds me of the like Bob McElrath is arguing about Stratum V2 and Braidpool, and it's like, well, Braidpool doesn't exist yet. Like Spiral, we fund him, but we love Braidpool, but it doesn't exist yet. So don't criticize Stratum V2 every like negative thing about it, because if your PhD non-existent thing, like let's improve things with something that exists, yeah, right? And it's the same thing here. Yeah. See if we have any comments.
Someone painted my dream using Impressionista. Could you share that? I would love to see whatever you think my dream is. Uh-huh.
But there's the, you know, security, censorship resistance, privacy argument. There's also the supporting other payment protocols, mm-hmm. right? That's an enormous advantage over Lightning Address.
But
Lightning,
to be fair,
does Lightning Address, first of all, it's called Lightning. Like, what about Andre? But like, how does Lightning Address support silent payments?
Well, the silent payment.
How does it support Spark?
The silent payment is very interesting to me. Don't the Spark and Cashew and Arc, wouldn't those, as long as they're connected to the Lightning Network, be compatible or no?
They are, but they're all pushing their own address formats as well.
Yeah, well, that can't you just have, I don't know, if I have Max at getalbi.com and then they integrate Spark or Arc, can't they just, because I trust them custodially? I think, to me, the core issue is like, I just don't mind trusting them.
But why? I mean, you said a few minutes ago that you are a big fan of silent payments, right?
Yeah. But that's for on-chain.
So how does Lightning Address support silent payments?
Yeah. So that to me is very compelling. I think my thing
is a new layer of abstraction.
It's right? A new layer of abstraction. So that's very interesting to me. I think my thing, and I hear all you're saying, like in the ideal world, there's no question this is better. But I think my point is like, the way I think about it is like, I mean, I'm using, for me, Lightning Network payments for like small amounts. I just don't care. Now, silent payments are interesting because like now if someone were to make a large payment to me, I would never do that with Lightning Network.
But here's what I find frustrating. Like, why does a Bitcoiner like you not care about security, censorship resistance, and privacy? Right.
I mean,
for payments, you're saying?
Yeah. Like if someone's sending me thousands, I just...
So you don't, but we've talked before about like Spark's horrible privacy, which they've fixed a little bit. But right. Humans don't want their daily payments like published to the world.
Well, absolutely not. Like, or whatever. I trust Albi not going to the whole world.
Okay. But,
and if Spark were just only Spark could see that, I wouldn't really care. The fact that they publish it to everyone in the world, that I care.
Okay. But we have the technology to fix this. Why would we not want to push for adoption of this? It's like
trade offs.
What's the trade-off?
Well, I don't know. There's a million things we could be working on. Like I have no problem.
But Max, I mean, Bitcoin is invented with all these properties.
Right.
They were weakened with Lightning Address, but because Lightning Address solved real problems, it was reusable and it gave human-readable names. Two great things for UX. Right. We all like them.
Right.
Well, actually, I've discovered today some people don't like even that, but most people like the option of human-readable names.
Right.
Now we have it. You can have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, I mean,
so the drawback being, yeah, you have to have people like me like banging the drum to get adoption. I don't understand the resistance.
I don't have resistance yet. Like, I mean, if my service providers, like if Albi integrates it, I'll be thrilled. I guess my point,
they already have.
They have Bolt 12 already?
Yes.
Amazing. So I'm not resistant. I guess,
dozens of applications already have it. Cash App has now gone on record to support not only Bolt 12, but also human Bitcoin addresses.
Yeah.
353.
I think
it's common. Whether you like it or not.
My thing for this has always been, in the abstract world, it's better. And that's amazing. And I hope everyone does it. But like, I would, just given time constraints, like my number one concern is just, will people use Bitcoin Lightning? That's it. It's just timed.
Agreed with it.
And
it seems orthogonal though. Like, I mean,
and put to use.
That seems like a right, like Oh, sure. We all want Bitcoin payments.
Yeah.
People to use Bitcoin payments. Okay. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't we also, why wouldn't we want adoption of this?
Yeah. No, I mean, I just think it's like in a limited, I mean, I don't know. It's like, I guess my point has always been like, Lightning Address works well enough for me. It's not a hair on fire problem for me. Other people want to solve
it. US dollars work well enough for me. Why are we even talking about Bitcoin?
Fair enough. Fair enough. Anyways,
they work. Dollars work well for you too. So why?
No, but like now I can do stuff like vibe coding. Like apparently someone's about to zap me, and that's super all right. sweet.
All right.
Yeah. Anyways, if everyone adopts it, that'd be amazing. And I think my, I guess, just advice would be like the more you can make it backwards compatible, then like there's no reason not to.
Yeah. I see. I well, actually, let's talk about some of the reasons yeah. I heard that concerns I heard. let's see. Well, I think the first two maybe were what you asked about last night, David. I wasn't there, but one like...
We haven't addressed the one that I was...
Well, can still be censored and locked in from domain provider.
Yeah.
So the... and your... Can still be censored. You, like the... If the wallet provider... If the common case is like you're using your wallet provider's DNS, then they can just remove the entry from their DNS and then you get effectively censored or you can't receive money. So that's true. But one thing, and this is a debatable point, but you know, you can fetch, you can do a one-time fetch of a Bolt 12 offer through DNS, and then every subsequent payment I make to you, I can just keep using that same Bolt 12 offer.
Okay.
So that's like a trust and first use scenario where I only have. So if the wallet provider later removes the entry, then I can still make payments.
Sure.
However, you know, it kind of breaks down because like if the wallet provider has removed the entry, then like you probably don't want to be using that wallet anymore, right? Yeah. So I think in reality, if you are at risk of censorship to the point where the wallet provider through coercion or whatever is removing your DNS entry, then you need to find a new wallet, right? But you also probably are like, okay, I'm going to host my own domain, right?
Yeah, I think after I've found that problem, I'll get more vigilant. I think the problem is I can theoretically imagine that I want censorship resistance as a core property.
Yep.
But I think a lot of people are just like, I don't know, whatever's easiest. Just give me, I mentioned yesterday, been a Gmail user for a couple decades. If I wanted to move off that, it'd be incredibly hard because I've given that identifier out to so many people. So many people know of that as the way to reach me. And I'm not even like marketing it.
Right.
It's just.
That's more your second point we'll get to though.
Okay.
Because like the censorship, like if you, as soon as you detect you're no longer receiving, like if I send you money and then I'm like, hey, David, I get this error message. I couldn't send you money. Then you're going to be like, what's the problem? And then you'll investigate it. And you're like, oh, my wallet provider just screwed me. You know?
Might run a website that has that identifier out on it and people might be sending me payments. And I'm kind of like, oh, now I have to undo my website or convince them that that's not a good place to send it. Like, so I think the like, grab the information once and trust that it's always going to be usable that way is like kind of a weak scenario.
There's like a group of people who already know they're at risk of having their incoming payments be blocked.
Yeah, if they're worried. Yeah.
And then there's a group of people who aren't yet sensitive or aware of that, and they'll move to that group, right? Mm-hmm. So what's important is that there's a solution for the people who are in that group, whether they're in the group today or they learn they're in that group later.
But the time matters, I think.
Yeah, but because... still, well, what matters is that there's actually a solution. I mean, I agree with the concern you're citing, but if there's no solution at all, or if the solution is you have to run your own LNURL and web server, that's a much higher barrier than just adding a DNS entry, right?
Okay.
So for the group of people who are at risk here, it's just a much lower barrier for them to have a solution that works than having to run their own, like become a
yeah, just registering DevOps. A domain is and adding a text file is easier than running a server.
Yeah. Right? So there'll be way more people satisfied because they can do it. A lot of people aren't going to be become a part-time DevOps person.
I mean, I think you're kind of overstating it. Like if that were really needed, people could build a little script to launch an AWS server.
Yeah, but you have to maintain it over time then.
Yeah.
What was your time?
Like if you're running a server like that at home, like you're definitely like having to pay attention to it over time. Like it can go down and then you're not receiving payments.
Yeah. I guess I'm just saying like the distinction between running, I wouldn't run it at my home. I'd run it in AWS or somewhere, right? And so the distinction between like, where's the...
Well, because if you're at censorship risk, then you're not running it on AWS, right?
Well, that's a different censorship risk than the domain. So I'm a fan of removing all of the
But if
the
like the
parties,
government has come after you or whatever and is blocking you, then like your problem, AWS is probably not a solution for you either.
Yeah. I mean, if it's the government coming, then AWS is not a good solution. But like, I guess the idea is if there's like a level of indirection where like, I don't buy the fact that I have to become a full DevOps person to run a server. Like, I think you can have lightweight server that basically requires no DevOps.
Like, what's an example?
Like AWS.
But that's not running your own server.
So what is your own?
I mean, the thing that I would want,
like
that's
running
my own
computer
is...
at home.
But meaning, is the possession of the physical hardware the bar? That's the threshold? That's the only one that works?
Well, I mean, a situation where you've not had to reveal your identity to a third party, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a couple...
Can you do AWS anonymously?
I doubt it. I don't know.
Well, then that's your answer.
I think there's a couple of ways this becomes more compelling in my mind. So again, the thing that I would want that would solve all of this is if there was a protocol where I could own my address on Bitcoin, boom, I'm like 120%, let's get that. I think one maybe challenge is it seems like there are not that many people that have this use case. And if they do have this use case where they're afraid of getting censored, like, okay, first of all, I'm not at all afraid of that. If I did have that happen, I would give you an on-chain address and be like, we're just going to move to Bitcoin. Now, you could argue that like, well, that's not good for small payments. And there's like people in emerging markets that they can't afford that. And then I would say, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Like,
I think we've talked before on the show about the importance of no KYC.
Yeah.
And it's not just because you want to do crime or... You don't want the government, like privacy or whatever. It's also just like substantially reducing onboarding friction.
Totally.
Which if we have time, we'll get to the second half of my full gift card experience.
Right.
Which TLDR, it's a very onerous process to actually redeem the gift card. It's like, it took me like 15 minutes and I didn't even complete it because I had passport.
Yeah, the business model.
Exactly. The same business model as SaaS. We got you locked in. You can't leave, motherfucker.
There's many use cases where just the horrendous onboarding user experience ruins the use case, right? And same with like all this vibe coding stuff, like or in like Noster's apps, like if I'm not into Bitcoin, but my first experience is receiving a small amount of Bitcoin from a Zap, if I have to like send my passport in to do that, like, sorry, no. So no KYC, I think super, super important. We've talked about that before. I think you guys agree.
Does MDK already solve that though?
Censorship resistance is a really important part of that.
Right.
If you don't have privacy and censorship resistance, eventually the regulators are going to require KYC.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like Spark's a great example of like, how long will Spark stay no KYC? Like, I don't know. But anything like that would be at risk to add KYC. So it's super important to preserve the properties of Bitcoin, such as censorship resistance, even for small payments, I think, because ultimately, that's what protects no KYC, which ultimately creates very good user experiences for users. So that's the sort of mainstream argument, I think.
Interesting. Okay, so the ability to give someone an address with no KYC to reduce friction is compelling. How is that done today, though? Because like, for example, like with, I don't know if Nick is listening, but an MDK, when you just like spin up like a vibe code thing and get a payment, does that already have a Lightning address? Or is it just like a YOLO for now and then we'll figure it out?
Well, at least an impressionist.fun, it's a QR code, right?
But it could be a Lightning address.
Yeah, but in that type, but that's more of a consumer merchant interaction. Yeah. You don't really need human readable names.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get your point. Like the no KYC thing is compelling to get more people on.
And I guess my point is, I'm not sure is there a way to do DNS with no KYC?
So that's why I come back to wanting the Bitcoin name on the Bitcoin blockchain.
Because like, I'm not an advocate for run your own server on AWS, but I'm just saying like, what are you getting by not doing that if you still have to KYC or maybe it's a light KYC, but you sort of have some relationship with the DNS provider. Like you have to register it somewhere, Squarespace or something, right?
Yeah.
So like, I just don't see the, I don't see like a huge gap between I log into Squarespace, I swipe my credit card, I pay them, and I also have them or AWS or somebody kind of run a server on my behalf. They seem about the same to me from complexity. I don't need to be a DevOps person probably in either case.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
That's a fair point. But again, if we had a name on the Bitcoin namespace, that to me is compelling as fuck.
I think
Bitcoin namespace. Yeah. If someone creates Bitcoin namespace that works, boom. Because then you don't need a KYC.
Yeah.
Okay, we actually have an interesting comment here, which we need to finally solve. One goal that I want to help solve for next year is we are in fact Noster LARPers. Matthew saying he would fat zap us every week if we were on Noster. You're right. We need to fix that. Okay.
Yeah.
I will help fix that next year.
Yeah.
I hear you, Matt. You're right. We are LARPing. I apologize for being a LARPer.
And someone gives a shout out to Spaces Protocol, which I think you've evaluated a little bit, David. We might have even talked about it on the show.
Yeah, we looked at I talked to one of the guys on the team there. I think they have a lot of the, I think they have a lot of the instincts of this problem that they want to be solved. But there's a critical problem in my mind, which is I think they have 3,000 or so. I haven't followed it closely, but initially I think there were 3,000 spaces that could be issued each year. And that's kind of restrictive.
Yeah.
And so then you can have subspaces, but then those are not self-sovereignly owned. You need to get the owner of the space to write it back. And there's some attempts to solve these same things, but I didn't find them things that kind of sit with my sensibility of what a truly self-sovereign thing would be. It still has like too many layers of people getting involved. And
for those of you who don't know, without outing all of this stuff, DK has a great idea here. Now, in the past, I would say if there's a great developer listening to the show that wants to implement DK's great idea, you should hit him up. But now I would say, DK, can you vibe code this?
No, I can't actually, because the blocker here is, I think there's an economic concept that I have proposed that I think is a credible solution.
That's a good idea.
But I think there's, I don't have a strong proposal on what the implementation should be. And so I think we need, we need people. I've gotten a bunch of feedback from a bunch of people, but I think we need people who would have a stronger, should it be sat as a bearer instrument? Should it be an op return? Should it be a separate client that's not on the Bitcoin blockchain that kind of connects to it via some, almost, sort of like a separate client that's like a node that can manage all of it. I don't have an opinion about that. I would like to engage with people who may have an opinion about that to try to figure out, sort of battle test what would be a good implementation. So it's unfortunately can't really be vibe coded without, like, that discussion is sort of the most important part.
DK has a multi-billion dollar idea here. If an enterprising young developer wants to come build it, hit him up.
Claude. Let me introduce you to Claude Opus.
Only $200 a month.
4.5.
It is funny, though. I think Claude, speaking of all the vibe coding and stuff, I think vibe coding is great if you want to build an impressionista or like I'm working on some music apps I'd mentioned.
Now that I'm excited to hear about.
I think Claude is good at that level, but like I forget if we talked about this in private, but like if you were to take Claude and say, evaluate the Bitcoin code base and point out places where it could be improved or potential bugs or something. Yeah. I feel like it's just not got enough context compared to the very best humans at that. Right?
Yeah, but wait till the next gigawatt cluster run.
It could be, but a lot of the best, the trade-offs and the decisions are not probably written in a coherent way for it to interpret it yet. I'm not saying it can never happen.
It's the least AGI pill I've ever heard you.
I'm just saying, I think it'll take many cycles before, before Claude can make productive contributions to Bitcoin. I'm not saying it'll never happen. I just think we're not very close, is my guess.
Spicy prediction: by 2027, it will.
Okay, you're gonna skip a year. I think what is the right implementation of this economic idea for how to solve, names in a decentralized way? I think there's still tons of implementation details that need to be discussed by people who actually are at the frontier of thinking about this, not some random vibe coding thing. That's all.
DK has a multi-billion dollar idea. Yeah. If you know how to use Claude.
But anyway. human Bitcoin addresses? Anything anything more on, did you finish your list or?
No. But I don't know. I feel like if I can't sell you on the importance of security and privacy, like,
I mean, I think we're sold on the importance of it. I think we just have concerns with, I guess, censorship resistant ultimately.
Okay. Well, okay. Let's say it doesn't fix that or address that.
Yeah.
It addresses security and privacy.
Yeah.
Why don't we want this?
In the abstract, I'm down.
I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right.
I think it all just comes down to, for me, it's a good idea. I don't see any reason not to do it other than trade-offs. And if people implement
But what are the drawbacks?
I don't think there's a drawback. I just think
you said there's trade-offs.
Well, time. Like,
well, you don't have to put any time into it. I mean, I would appreciate if you guys were advocates for it, but you don't have to be an advocate. Others are putting time into it.
Yeah, I'm certainly not anti by any stretch of the imagination.
Like I said, several dozen applications have already implemented.
Totally.
They put their time into it.
Yeah, I mean, look. If
I wanted to get one today, just to make it very concrete. I wanted to,
Phoenix is the best experience right now.
In Phoenix, I think I have the app, but I don't actively use it a lot. Should I be a Phoenix wallet user, or can I have Phoenix be like the provider of my human Bitcoin address, even if I'm not using them as my wallet?
I think it's 12.cash is one where, and I actually have, so I have like a human Bitcoin address that's with the domain 12.cash. It's not a wallet though. And then I've plugged that into Phoenix.
So you're something
so you
like
can do that
Moneyball
as well.
At 12.cash or
yep.
something?
Yep.
And then you connect that to your Phoenix address or your Phoenix wallet.
My Phoenix Bolt 12 offer. I got my Bolt 12 offer from Phoenix, plugged that into the DNS entry for 12.cash money, and then specifically the entry money wallet 12.cash. And so if you pay that, it goes to my Phoenix
and
wallet.
And does 12.cash, do you have like you have a commercial relationship with them where you're paying them per month or something or?
I think it was a one-time. I mean, it's Stephen DeLorme's website. I mean, it's like, yeah. I think I paid a one-time fee or something, but.
So if I already have Albi and they support it, I've been using Max at getalbi.com for years. What would I need to do to switch to be the Bolt 12 compatible?
I'm not sure.
So Albi guys, if you're listening, down.
They also, I think they support Bolt 12, but I don't know. The only Phoenix and soon Lexi are the human Bitcoin address adoptees, BIP 353. So I don't know. I don't think I'll be yet support BIP 353.
Well, I'll be guys, if you're listening, tell me what I need to do.
But when Cash App launches it, that will be big because then very high volume big user.
And Cash App will be itself they'll have millions of text records in the domain, in the DNS?
They'll only need one because they're custodial. So you can map to all their millions of users.
Oh, I see.
With just one DNS entry.
Right. That's like a wild card.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Matthew's asking if you love Brad Pitt.
Oh, Moneyball? I was Moneyball.
Oh, he was in
Moneyball long before a movie was concepted.
Right.
Oh, really? Oh, because you read the book first.
Yeah, the book came first. Okay.
Right. Did the author try to buy it from you? Somebody tried to buy it from you?
I thought they would try to buy my Twitter account when the movie came out, but they never got an offer.
He went to my middle school, you know.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, who did? In New Orleans. Michael Lewis.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought. Anyhow.
All right, we got the Unabomber.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
From your high school?
The high school in town, yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's pretty spicy.
There's a little two square mile, you know, little town outside of Chicago where the Unabomber grew up and went to high school there.
So, random thought. Kevin Kelly, in his book, What Technology Wants, has a whole chapter about the Unabomber.
Oh, is there?
Yeah. How do you feel about the Unabomber?
I mean, I have not followed his story super closely.
Yeah.
But generally, I feel like he's kind of like extreme and kind of did some messed up stuff, but not that he's like totally misunderstanding. I think he has clarity in view and then sort of executed.
Sort of. His philosophy is pretty interesting, right? Like things were like techno capital accelerating, and like I could easily see why you think that's bad. Killing people, clearly not the right answer. Yeah. Violence, never the right answer. Yeah. But like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're going to kind of get more extreme versions of that.
Yeah,
not the killing I'm proposing, but I'm saying we're going to get more extreme versions.
Peace and love are always the path. Light, love.
Yeah, like how technology changes, kind of rewires society. And, you know, there's good and bad about it. I'm not going to just like be one way or the other. I think if you want to be like grounded and have clarity in what you're looking at.
Yeah.
Try to just see.
And it is kind of crazy because most people don't. Most people are just like, fucking like, hey, like quarterly earnings, baby. And then like 15 years later, we did what?
What?
I know.
So we got a few more things to want to chat about.
It seems like rein it in. All right.
Just real quick update. I talked about Fold gift cards last episode.
Oh, yeah.
But I hadn't yet tried to redeem them.
Yeah.
And so then I tried, you know, because I bought.
Yeah, a bunch of optimism. Spent a bunch of money.
Yeah, $100 on each on 5 different gift cards. Yeah. Looking forward to giving away for the holidays.
And that
part of the experience was great. Just walked into a store, just like any other gift card. Pull it off the rack. Said I want $100 on each. Is beautiful.
Yeah.
Then I tried to redeem one just to see what that side of the experience was like, because Million from Primal, long ago, like in 2019. Created a gift card, Bitcoin gift card experience. And that was an amazing experience because he didn't do any KYC. So like the onboarding experience for redemption was brilliant. You downloaded his app onto your phone, but it was a self-custody wallet and it was just like super slick. That's super awesome. Fast onboarding, super slick.
Bring it back, Million.
Yeah.
Make Primal that too.
So unfortunately with Fold, there's many pages of like forms you have to fill out, and you have to provide the extreme amount of, because KYC or no KYC, but it's like how much KYC.
Yeah, it's always a spectrum, right?
You know, if it's like just your name and email, that's light, right? I call that light, right?
Anal scan.
Heavy, which ultra heavy, I guess. That's even worse than
That's just ChatGPT.
But, you know, having to like upload your passport or what I've learned, like my home address, I don't like giving my home address to Bitcoin companies because Bitcoin companies are targeted by hackers to steal a list because it's like a great target list. So, and then there were just a lot of questions like, am I a weapons dealer? And just like crazy questions. Literally, I was asked if I'm a weapons dealer. So it just took a long time. So then not only do I find that onerous, it made me.
And also, like, if just as a pause,
if you are
like,
a weapons dealer,
like, yep, I sure am. Like, who comes up with this retarded stuff? Like, yeah.
I don't know to what extent it is a third, like Blackhawk or some kind of like third party provider requirements, or you're aware that this got added. I doubt Fold like intentionally wants to add all this friction, right? But now it's giving me pause. Like, do I actually even want to give these as a gift? Because now I'm trying to give it to someone to create a really
good
experience for them to onboard a Bitcoin. But now I'm thinking it's faster and simpler if I just tell them install like Phoenix or something or Primal or whatever, like a wallet like that, and then I just like send them some Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Right. So that's unfortunate.
I think there's still a huge opportunity for somebody to build a great gifting experience.
Times 10.
It just doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. And it sucks.
And I don't know the
I
whole,
want River to be
I don't I don't know the whole regulatory landscape, but I suspect one can deliver something that is like compliant and fine if it's light KYC. So it would be a very
meaning the
much
name and email
faster What much about faster onboarding
experience. What about just like a scratch off? I think someone else proposed this where it's like it's a QR code scratch off or something.
Well, that I mean the Fold gift card is a scratch off and Millions of scratch off. So sure.
It's still once you redeem the scratch off through the app has to take you through this proctology.
There's
got to
be someone, even if it's not like a company.
Maybe this is what Vibe Coding Agent should do, right?
Maybe. that would be interesting. It's like scratch it off and like show this to Replit or Cloud Code and tell them to load it up in a wallet for you or something. Like, I don't know. I just feel like
I don't know all the reasons Million stopped doing that 6 years or whatever. I mean, another challenge with this business is like you're at the behest of like Blackhawk and a few of these companies, and there's almost no margin for you.
Yeah.
And another thing I learned, like that you mentioned breakage earlier, sadly, there's very misaligned incentives between the customer and the business.
because the business doesn't want people to redeem because they make more money.
Yeah, that's like where they buy the card margins. never convert right? it into Bitcoin.
That's horrible misalignment.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to solve that. I just know that's horrible.
It feels like just like so much of all of our problems with everything we talk about with Bitcoin just comes back to like, it's a pain in the ass to still integrate fiat. Like, I know we have to, because step by step, but like, man, one day when we're all in a Bitcoin state, you're just going to like,
creating great applications where you earn Bitcoin. That's
just
brilliant.
Get out of the fucking.
Last thing I'll say though, like Fold or any kind of company offering such a gift card, a reason they are incentivized and aligned to get customers to actually use it is because, like with Fold, you become a Fold, you create a Fold account. So it's a customer acquisition tool for them. So that is a reason they want people to convert, because they want more customers and they can upsell them on other services they offer.
But they might be like well-intentioned, but you know, their distribution partners, Blackhawk or Walgreens or whoever, might sort of not have that same ethos.
What about those old, like in the old days, there were those cards, like I think it was Ballet Crypto or whatever, you just like give someone, like scratch it off and you just have it.
Well, when you say a Bitcoin, meaning like a private key?
Yeah.
Or equivalent of a private key?
And like you just need to figure out the wallet.
Yeah.
Is that the Cassius coin?
But again,
something like that.
I don't know all the compliance and regulatory requirements, but let's assume there's some. Then
somehow they made it work in the past. Maybe now it's like illegal and they were just kind of YOLOing it back in the day.
What's your example?
Ballet Crypto is one that I
remember. Ballet.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, anyways.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
You used to talk about those coins, the physical coins. Just like, yeah.
We had a couple other things. Shrinks. This will be short because I'm not I'm not a shrink. No, I'm not a cryptographer. But shrinks is it, because we talk about quantum every other week. We talk about like the quantum threat to Bitcoin.
Is it coming?
Right? And
this is where we have the YouTube video. Quantum.
That's a great quantum surprise face.
Hello.
Is that that's our intro to the quantum segment?
Exactly.
All right. So, we're here to report the news from the past week. So there's a new paper published and a new mishmash of cryptography hash-based signatures, which appears to be a pretty practical way to create quantum resistance for Bitcoin. So one of the authors is Jonas Nick. I've known him for a long time. He's extremely credible. He works for Blockstream, but he's been an applied cryptographer for, I think, at least a decade, applied to cryptographer for Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So things like Music2 and Schnorr and all kinds of other stuff, like he worked a lot on that. So I haven't digested this like 40-page paper in detail. So I can't
Steve signed it to me about a half hour before we started. Yeah.
Sounds like
I know. But hopefully we have DK to
summarize.
No, I'll summarize what I know about it.
Why you got to give that?
I just know that coming from Jonas Nick, I expect high quality. Obviously, we all need to vet it and look at it, but I expect it is high quality. But what's interesting, things I learned, one of the big drawbacks of the various quantum resistant signature schemes that we already know about are that they have huge signatures. Mm-hmm. Several orders of magnitude larger, like 8,000 bytes or 80,000 bytes. Just for a signature. So you can imagine, having like 100 times less bandwidth in the blockchain, something that's already quite constrained at like 7 transactions per second, right? So the scheme he and his co-author propose dramatically reduces that signature size to a base of 324 bytes. So like Schnorr signatures, which is what exists today on Bitcoin, 64 bytes. So this would be 324. So 5x-ish bigger, but not orders of magnitude, not like 2, 3, 4 orders of magnitude bigger. So much smaller signatures. The gotcha is, and they're hash-based signatures.
That's
and
nice.
And adding that is what gives it quantum resistance, right? The gotcha is that typically the signatures are stateless. So like, if you sign a key multiple times, like it doesn't depend, you don't need any past data from past attempts. What they're proposing is that they introduce a stateful signature so that you actually, the 324 bytes the first time you sign the key, you need to keep that data around, because the next time you sign the key, you need that data and add 16 more bytes. Mm. So then the next signature is 340 bytes. And then the next signature is 356 bytes. And it keeps growing, right? So so there's a couple drawbacks to that. One, you have to keep state now and retain that.
And presumably that would be like the...
And back it up.
The end user.
And have recovery for that.
That'd be a recovery process.
Yeah. So that's one drawback. And then two is it's this asymptotically growing size, right? Yeah. Now, the latter is addressed by simply once it reaches the size of the stateless cryptography, just you can switch to stateless. Yeah. So there's actually not really a drawback there. If you're comparing it to like these, you know, like an 8,000 byte signature, there's no drawback. It's just you get, it's way better until it reaches that size and then it's the same. Then the only real drawback is the need for backup and recovery. But one observation they make is that if you're using a modern wallet that doesn't reuse addresses, you typically just sign once, right? You create an address, receive to it once. You don't receive again for privacy reasons. So then you're only signing once to when you go to spend that UTXO.
Mm-hmm.
So then this growth of the signature size is actually just like academic. Practically, you're using 324 byte signatures. So it's only five times worse than today's Bitcoin.
And is that because you're always going to send to a new one? Or you'll receive change at a new quantum resistant address?
No, I mean, just like forget quantum and this proposal, just like how Bitcoin wallets work today. You receive to address and then you spend it.
Yeah.
And then you don't receive the address again.
Right.
So then you never sign that key again. Mm-hmm. The underlying key for that address, you'd never sign again.
Right? I think most modern wallets do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the reason why there's still heavy reuse on the blockchain is because these big exchanges reuse addresses, but
site, by the way, just hit me where it's like test to see if my address is quantum or not. Because I mean, that to me, like more I think about quantum, the more it's like the individual should be able to solve this on their own, right? Like if your address is, maybe you want to test it, you don't know. It's like,
well, no keys are quantum resistant. I think you said addresses. So like, addresses are quantum resistant in the sense that they've had the public key hash. Mm. But as soon as you go to spend it, then it can be stolen. So, I mean, there's a couple of scenarios. Right?
Is there like a service where I could like upload either my pub key or a wallet, some kind of credential, and be like, check if I need to switch address?
Everyone does.
What do you mean?
There's no Bitcoin that's quantum resistant. There's no quantum resistant cryptography in Bitcoin today.
Right, but I thought...
I think what you're getting at is that there's certain address types that have been hacked.
Correct.
And that address is quantum resistant.
Right.
And then there's others that are not, like Satoshi's paid pub key coins.
And I know the super early ones are not, but as an example, right? So I'm not thinking like super early coins. I'm thinking once people start using Taproot addresses.
Yes.
Like, I don't know.
Early coins and Taproot coins.
Yeah.
But there's a couple attack scenarios. The first, if there are ever quantum computers, first of all, they'll likely attack the ones that are
early,
vulnerable at rest, because it'll take a long time to crack it. And then they'll target the ones that have the most Bitcoin. As we said on previous shows, there's only a few paid above key ones that have much more than 50 Bitcoin. So those would be the first. Then the 50 Bitcoin paid above key, which there's a lot. But then once the quantum computer is fast enough, then it can compete for everyone's Bitcoin. Because as soon as you broadcast a transaction, you reveal your public key.
Got it. Yeah.
And then it's vulnerable too. So it's fast enough. So I'm not sure.
I'm not sure
the value of that service. Plus, there's no action you can take right now. Well, I mean, I guess
If you get a Taproot address, you can move it to a non-Taproot address, right?
Yeah. But I mean, that's actually a really good discussion and debate, but I would advise against that. I mean,
why?
Because Taproot's the latest and greatest and best address format, right? So the only counter argument to that statement
is quantum.
Is if you're worried about quantum.
Right.
And
so you lose a bunch of other recent upgrades or abilities.
Yeah. I still think it's overblown for people to be worried. I mean, it's good that like the Jonas Nicks of the world are thinking of like you know, new ways to like upgrade if and when needed. Mm-hmm. But like for users, I just think it's, it shouldn't be on their radar to like,
I still think
switch away from Taproot to go back to like P2PKH or something. Like,
I haven't read Nick's post on this. I need to, the Quantum post, but I will say, I know we've talked about it a million times, but like, I still think we need like a simple one pager that you could give to like an investor at a public equity investing company.
Well, Presidio Bitcoin, I think, should deliver that, right?
Yeah,
we put on a huge event. We have a ton of content. We've already, we have folks at Presidio Bitcoin did publish like a post on this.
I think we need to be targeted towards someone at a public equity investment company. Like,
yeah. So I think that could be, that could be created.
I think that would like,
but
go along.
I think it's a good idea too, because it actually came up in the hallway chatter at Builder last night,
and it's coming up in the chatter in all my
about
groups.
Like, hey, should I be worried about this?
Right. So I agree to create the one pager with that target audience, but like here in the show, we've talked about it a lot. We're well versed in it.
But I still have a lot to learn. Like, the fact that I'm asking this, like, I was kind of nervous. Like, do I have a Taproot address?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's, I mean, you heard my position.
Yeah.
I don't think it's definitive. I mean, you can certainly argue it. I mean, it because it's a function of like, how quick do you think a quantum computer will steal the Bitcoin? If you think it's going to happen in the next like few months or whatever, well, you know, if in that case, it almost doesn't matter if you move your Bitcoin, because like, if it's literally going to happen like tomorrow, then Bitcoin's not ready. It'll be like some like emergency scenario. Like, we'd probably have to like halt the blockchain while we then emergency fork in this new
I ain't about all that
shrinks or whatever.
I ain't about all that. No halting.
Well, but in this hypothetical I'm posing, like one entity would steal everyone's Bitcoin. So that kind of like, if tomorrow, that's the hypothetical, right? Now, I don't think it's going to happen. So anyway, my calculation is, you don't need to emergency panic move your Taproot. Now, if you are like a custodian that's reusing addresses, I think you should upgrade your technology stack to not reuse addresses.
Why the hell wouldn't they? Like, why for an exchange?
Trade-offs is one.
Yeah.
No, but it really is.
But,
I mean,
but quantum is like a real threat.
It's the same trade-off you're saying. Like, a prioritization trade-off, it hurts them.
Totally.
I think there is one non-priority trade-off. I think it's really common for exchanges to give their customers like whitelist certain addresses so that the customer only sends to those addresses, and it does have security benefits. Mm. Like, you've already told the exchange, then you're reusing addresses.
Yeah.
Right. So, in any case, I don't think people need to panic and switch away from Taproot addresses. That actually just seems absurd to me. I think the important things now are like what we did, the event we held here, Nick Carter's research now, just raising awareness. But really to, number one, like calm the fears of investors, I guess. But, and number two, like make sure that there's an adequate amount of R&D. So, because we don't know if or when this will ever occur. 2 years, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years. And because none of us can claim that, oh, it's 50 plus years away for sure. Right. Then it's good to have some R&D, like Jonas Nick just did and others have as well, to be better prepared.
Two ideas on that. The one pager from Presidio Bitcoin would be huge. Also, I wonder, and I bet someone like Mark would potentially be useful and excited to help with this as well. What if there was another day, kind of like a quantum day like we did last time, but the focus group was public equity investors? Like, you just try and get guys that are like portfolio managers sitting there and like bring in, it's like not devs for devs, but just like, here's a chance for you to like ask, almost like a public investor day for a company, but for Bitcoin. And like, they could ask whatever they want, but like really focus on quantum. It's like, here's your chance. Like, you want to ask, you know, Greg Maxwell a question? Like, there you go. Another idea.
I mean, I like the high level idea. I think it makes sense. Quantum feels like a piece of it.
Yeah.
I think people would want to come and learn all kinds of stuff.
We already,
Bitcoin Investor Day.
My view, we had the quantum event this year. I don't think we should have another quantum event next year. We already covered it. And there's like these incremental updates. I agree with you on the one pager though. We should summarize all the amazingness of that event we had the summer.
Yeah.
We don't have to repeat that event.
Yeah.
We just need to summarize it better.
And specifically get it into like portfolio managers. So one other thing before we click in stream, because I know the people are going to want to hear this. We can't let the people go. Steve already heard this, but another thank you to Steve. For those of you who are wondering, the matcha that he delivered to me had an extremely high umami content. I've been drinking it every morning. It's delicious and luscious. So thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
And DK today finally upped his tea game as well. He's having a nice Sencha. And, you know, it's finally, we've upgraded DK from tea pleb
wonderful
post quantum tea holder.
Quantum resistant.
He's got quantum resistant green tea. So our tea game continues to be very strong at the Presidio Bay.
We didn't get to the topic you wanted to talk about.
We'll talk about it maybe next week.
Yeah, next week.
I mean, for those of you who don't know, just if you want to check it out, Albi released a cool auction app. It's called Satoshi's Auction. It's worth checking out.
Yeah. Very cool.
Sweet.
Cool. All right. Till next week.
Let's
wrap.